You're listening to The Good Morning Show with Oliver O.T. Thomas.
We're back. Welcome back to The Good Morning Show. Man, how Oliver Thomas, the early bird. Brought to you and presented by United Healthcare. Quality, affordable. How y'all like my advertising voice? Dr. Dunham's laughing at me. Sometimes I get possessed by the early bird. But yes, brought to you by United Healthcare. Quality and affordable. Don't leave home without it. I tell you, I show y'all all the time. I show you to prove it again. Some folks say, man, why you be putting United Health? Because that's who covered. That's who I'm covered by, man. I got, it's right there. My United Healthcare. Dr. Dunham, is you see it, huh?
I see.
Yeah, I'm not false advertising.
He's not.
No, no.
It's real.
I don't leave home without it. And also, man, major kudos and thank you to the Greater New Orleans Tourism Marketing Commission. Yes, one time in New Orleans, the tricentennial Mark Romick. Thank you guys for what you guys do. And one of the great ladies of our time. Yes, Dr. Rochelle Head Dunham.
Good morning.
Welcome back to the Good Morning Show.
Thank you, thank you.
You know, mental health like education, right?
Yeah.
There are three things that have, we are so numb to like crime and violence in New Orleans, right? We know we've been the murder capital mm-hmm. in five eras. We know we've been on that roller coaster for 60, 70 years.
Yeah.
When you talk about violence in this city. Our city was six times more violent than cities its size, and this was 20, 30 years ago. But there's some issues, man, like, you know, people getting paranoid when if it's a gray cloud following, right?
Yeah.
They're scared because they don't know if the pumps are going to work.
Mm-hmm.
Education, the flux of education. Where is education going? What is it today? What system is running it?
Mm-hmm.
And then now mental health.
Yeah.
I've always thought we've been cuckoo, right? But Doc, I need your professional services right here.
Okay.
I've always maintained. And for my Facebook Live, Dave, Tamara, Melby, I've always maintained that in order to really be sane, you have to have a certain level of cuckoo-ness. I'm scared of real sane people. Real sane people bother me, especially the ones who think they have it all together.
Yeah.
So is it okay? I believe that I think my cuckoo-ness balances my saneness. Or does that just mean I need more therapy?
Well, you know.
Now I'm using it and I can't pay you, but I need your advice.
I'm with you. So I cannot use cuckoo, okay? That's not a word that I can necessarily use. But what I will say, though, you definitely have to have a sense of humor in this world. And what I mean
okay,
by
so,
that
so
is.
So you wouldn't use my cuckoo-ness word.
Well, you can use it, but, I would say that you really have to have a sense of humor in this world because the things that happen
right.
are sometimes so overwhelmingly complicated and confusing and they really will take you down mentally that you gotta find some humor in it.
It's like Bishop Love and Professor Blair. The show Love, Live, and Inspire, like starting at 6 o'clock, but like a positive message, not knowing that I'm going to come on with some hard-hitting challenges. We're going to mm-hmm. have you talking about the plight of mental illness.
Yeah.
But to have that uplifting, that highly spirited part actually helps you deal with
Absolutely.
Those challenges better. Okay.
It is one of the most sophisticated defenses against
okay.
mental illness is to have a sense of humor, believe
right.
it or not.
Right.
And so that's why I'm saying that I would say that you got to be able to laugh some of this stuff off. It is so absolutely ridiculous and it's so absolutely unheard of and illogical and confusing that at some point you have to detach, separate, and laugh about it.
What do you do, Doc? How do you deal?
Do this every day?
Yeah, because you're always pretty. You always got a smile on your face. You're always uplifting. And you bear the burden of everyone who's dealing with these challenges. They bring it to you. How do you do it?
Well, you know, I get that often. You know, how do you manage this? You're always so cool. You're always so laid back. Because I don't take on the burden personally, first
okay.
of all, because it really is not my burden to bear.
Mm-hmm.
I'm blessed in a way to help with the problem, but not to fix the problem.
Right.
And many people put themselves in the position of, I gotta fix this. I gotta make this right. I gotta move this dial in some way. And in the process, you get lost in what you're supposed to be doing. And so I never bite the elephant. I always take chips. And I'm always hopeful that it will get better. Because if you're doing what you need to do, it will get better. Now, you're not going to fix it necessarily, so I don't go into it with that mindset. It's really how you approach a problem will determine what your mindset is going to be once the problem is over with. But you can't, you cannot take these things on personally as yours to fix.
So as challenging as life is, it doesn't mean you can't face it with an uplifted spirit.
Absolutely.
Right?
You better.
Wow.
You better find that, else it will take you down. There's no way I could work for the state of Louisiana for 28 years and still be smiling and having this conversation with you.
First name Hallie, last name Louie, right? Right here with Dr. Rochelle. Hey, Dunham, Doc, you've been praying for some help. You've been, this whole mental health question, and you've brought it to the forefront. Mm-hmm. It is not only a national conversation, but
yes,
it's a very prominent conversation in the state, mm-hmm, in the city right now.
Yeah.
And along came a judge.
Yeah.
Wow, you got to be excited about Judge Kern Reese.
Yeah,
and this,
yeah,
and this initiative. You've been praying for, yeah, you've been working towards putting this kind of puzzle together,
yeah,
for mental health.
It's a piece.
It's a piece.
One more piece.
It's a piece.
That's the other thing. So,
right,
so here's I know Judge was on talking,
yes,
about the assisted outpatient treatment.
The assisted outpatient treatment.
So here's how I think about that. So people get to help a couple of different ways.
Mm-hmm.
Either they go voluntarily,
right,
walk through the door, and they are mentally there. They really want to change. They don't know what they need, but
right,
they know you got something that can help them. So they,
uh-huh,
come. Then there are those who don't realize that they need help.
They don't know their level of cuckoo-ness.
They don't know they need help.
Okay.
And so you have to force them. Their will gets superseded by,
mm-hmm,
what the clinical person thinks is better.
Right.
And they get committed,
right,
into treatment. And then there are those people who need a little bit of coercion.
I sentence you.
They need, yeah, they need the black robe. I know he talked about the black robe. I sentence you to the black robe. And so you need a little bit of push.
Right.
Because you can't really make,
right,
that work in your own head. And my telling you is not enough. So, you know, we're going to have the civil court judge tell you, you got to be in treatment.
It's like your mama asking you to do your homework.
Yeah. I asked you.
I asked you
a lot of times.
I asked you. I ain't asking you.
No more.
No. No more. 504-260-9265.
Yeah.
Another piece of the puzzle. Dr. Dunham, Judge Reese also talked about resourcing. Are we finally seeing a time now, you know, where we're going to start seeing mental health strategically get the type of resources that it needs?
So I think we're getting there.
Okay.
But here's what I think people have to be mindful of. The situation that brings light to the problem,
mm-hmm,
is not necessarily going to be what you think the problem really is. And under the circumstances, the money is coming, mm-hmm, but it's under the umbrella of opioid treatment. So
gotcha. Okay.
What we have to understand, though, is that it's not just about the opioids,
mm-hmm,
because that brain of an opioid person is really the problem. And so that's where the mental illness stuff comes under the radar. And you have to treat, make sure you're taking that money. All they say is that the person has to have that drug on board. But they have a whole host of other stuff. So the programming and the treatment has,
right,
to take advantage of the fact that, okay, so I've got money now to treat this whole mental picture.
Doc, you mentioned the opioids. You know, I finished the DEA Citizens Academy not long ago. I'm working on an initiative right now with Brian Singleton, the SAC, mm-hmm, Steve Azam, Tanisha Stevens, the Mayor's Crime Commissioner, with several ministers, a Safe and Sober initiative,
uh-huh,
trying to get the community involved in what is safe and sober.
Yeah.
And what I learned when I did the Citizens Academy was that certain drugs, like alcohol, affect certain people different ways.
Oh, absolutely.
And some, the chemists and the doctors with the DA was like, no, there are some people who can take one hit.
Oh, yeah.
One drink. They can do one harsh drug.
Listen, most people.
And never do it again. But there are other people.
13% of the population can't do that.
You know, and we see people put themselves in environments with alcohol,
mm-hmm,
with drugs, and they're not wired the same way the folk who can function with it are. I think there was this,
yeah,
picture on Instagram of this young woman, a beautiful college student now,
mm-hmm,
floating around,
mm-hmm,
who somebody put some type of drug in her drink.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And see, the thing is, you don't know who that person is.
Right.
You can't tell who that person is by looking at them.
Right.
You cannot tell what brain is going to be the brain that's vulnerable to long-term impairment,
right,
if exposed,
right,
to it, versus the one that exposure not going to do anything because that part of my brain works well. right? And so that's why prevention is so important.
Are we in, you know, folk talked about the 60s and how pervasive drugs and freedom and sexual freedom and all those mm-hmm. things were. Are we in a drug culture right now? Doc, and I say that because as someone who socializes,
yeah.
I see so many young professionals mm-hmm. who feel like they don't think they're alcoholics if they just do it from Thursday to Sunday.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
If they just pop in a few pills.
Yeah.
They don't, and it's not the people on the street.
Yeah. Right. That's a functional.
These are the ones who work
in
the court,
every day.
Right?
Yeah.
In the city hall and, yeah. and run the businesses.
Yeah.
And they've convinced themselves that it's okay and they can't function, or this is how they can be free.
Yeah. So okay. So there you go. So fundamentally underlying a lot. So we all have to figure out how to cope.
Okay.
Right? I mentioned humor a few minutes ago.
Right.
As one of the ways that I mm-hmm. cope. We all have to figure out mm-hmm. what coping skills work and which ones work the best for
right.
us. There are healthy skills and there are unhealthy skills.
Mm-hmm.
And depending upon how problematic your emotional state is,
mm-hmm.
you're going to really, really be reaching out there for
right.
ways to deal with your circumstances.
Right.
If you can't figure that out, one good way is to use a chemical because it's going to numb everything.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to either relax you or it's going to stimulate you, but it's going to cloud your mental state
mm-hmm.
in some way
right.
that you're not dealing with. It mutes that pain.
Okay.
So the underlying issue with why people congest those kind of substances is always, well, what is going on with you? That question has to be asked.
How do you, what about people who struggle to find that thing? They keep saying, right? And this is important because I hear this over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
I wish I knew what that thing was that made me feel this way.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is there a thing? Is it not a thing? Is it just, is it who they are? But usually it is a thing.
I think it always is a thing.
High five.
It's always a thing, to use your terminology.
Are they afraid to admit it? Do they not know it?
All of the above.
All of the above.
Both of the above. People don't know why. Now, sometimes they do.
Right.
But it's so repressed.
Right.
And the memory, they've covered over and sealed over that memory
right.
so intensely that they can't retrieve it real easy and tell you. But it'll show itself if they start digging. It'll
right.
start to come to. That's the whole purpose of therapy, really, about to uncover the layers.
Say that again.
That's the whole purpose for therapy, to uncover the layers.
But I don't need to talk to anyone.
Well,
I can manage my own
because there's so much stigma associated with it. You know, so it's like one of the things that can help you is one of the very things that, particularly in the African American culture, that you don't do that. What's wrong with you? You know, and then we get the spiritual piece confused in there that it's about your religion that you're not, or your spirituality that you're not having you're having these problems. But the truth of the matter is, whoever you are, we all have experiences, some good, some bad, and memory is constantly being made and laid. And that stuff gets buried, but it bubbles up. Behind it bubbles up.
I've seen very talented people, and first of all, it's thank you, but you with Victor Sims or Dr. Shervington, Brian Turner the other day, and now Judge Reese, is helping people break down, you know, some of these. I've seen, it's almost like some of the most talented and gifted people
mm-hmm.
that I meet
mm-hmm.
don't believe in their own talent and their own gifts.
Yeah.
And I'm seeing more and more of that as I bump into folk. And I'll say something, look, and I'm not trying to jump on any particular group, but it seems like the stresses for people under 40
mm-hmm.
seem to have multiplied for my generation and the generation after that.
Yeah, so much coming at them. We had, you know,
okay.
I was up really late last night
right.
having a conversation with family members, some of the millennials and then the baby boomers. We're having this huge, intense conversation about why we aren't meeting in the middle. What is the divide between us in terms of our ability to communicate and relate?
Talk to us.
And one of the truths we agreed to, certainly I agreed to,
right.
was that, you know, we didn't have as much to choose from, as much to deal with. We really had things a little bit more confined and defined for us. And so we work within a different set of limits to develop who we were and to make decisions. And so I think it really helped character solidification to happen in a much less complicated way. Unfortunately, I think for younger people coming up now, there is just so much that they have to contend with in a setting where communication and the human relationship on a day-to-day basis is really not a major factor.
I talked to a young person, Doc, the other day, 504-260-9265, very successful, on their own business. They made a decision to get off of Instagram. They said that it was mentally putting pressure on them and creating a false sense of celebrity and expectations that was having a mental impact on them.
Always.
They shut it down.
Always comparing.
They shut it down.
They're always in a comparing mode. And comparing yourself to what? Something that's not even really real necessarily?
Wow. And that's the same thing that they said about they were buying into something that was not really real. Now, they're already successful, but they were feeling
even more.
They were feeling like people who were posting and bragging and boasting about whether it's their body or their millions or their bling, that it was having an impact on how they rated their success, and this person is already successful.
They're already successful. Already successful. Because there's always going to be something more. No matter how much you have, money, fame, success, accomplishments, somebody else is going to look like they've done more.
Every time we talk about social media, we talk about its advances in technology, where we are right now. But every time we get into the weeds and talk to folk about social media, there's some huge psychological impact that it's having on people, from murder to suicide. The percentages of people who spend a lot of time on social media, suicide has gone up.
It has. For sure it has. Bullying.
Bullying on social media is out of control. Keeping up with the Joneses on social media has gone up.
All of that. Yeah, because it's access to more information to have to entertain or deal with. You asked me earlier, so how do you keep smiling? How do you keep doing this? I am very selective about what I allow myself to entertain. Very selective.
What's your Instagram account?
I don't have an Instagram.
Well, hold on. You're very successful. You're one of the most successful people in this country in your field, and you don't have an Instagram account?
Well, I'm telling you.
Really?
That is not absolutely necessary to be successful. Now, I'm further along in my career. I'm established in my career, and so I'm in a place that is not comparable to somebody who's trying to establish success. And so needing that, or needing to even be able to say that you're connected.
Then let me ask you for a solution here. The solution line, 504-260-9265. For someone who's trying to establish themselves, who believes that social media, because they see all this stuff on social media, how do they protect themselves with their reality if they're still inspired and want to also play the social media game?
I think you always have to create balance in your life. Too much of anything. You know, there are some very simple adages in life that hold true independent of what generation you're part of. The balance is key. So too much of social media, too much of anything, it throws you out of balance.
Parents are starting to take cell phones away from kids now. They're starting to limit the access and use.
That is where the control has to happen. I mean, it's being brought to them in part by parents. Now, access in society in general, we can't totally control as a parent, but we can control things like that. Absolutely, for a young child.
You better control it.
Absolutely. You have to.
Wow. What a powerful conversation. Guys, see people are calling. Line one, Chris, you're on with Dr. Dunham.
How you doing,
hey,
everybody?
Chris, God bless, man. You're on the air.
Good. We're doing good. So I wanted to comment to, the stress you spoke about, the current stresses that this generation, the millennial generation, is dealing with and things like that.
Yes.
I had a conversation with my father, and there were just some things that, There are things that my father taught me that I'm grateful for, but there are things that my dad just kind of like overlooked that he felt wasn't necessary because of the upbringing that he gave me and he afforded us. And I think a lot of times they don't really go into detail what it's really like to maintain a mortgage, a house, mm-hmm. a actual lifestyle
Great
for
point.
It, not just yourself, but
wow.
for your family.
Great point, Chris.
You know?
Yeah.
And I think that...
Wow. Hey, Chris? Hello? Chris? Chris? Chris raises an important point.
He does.
I've talked to so many millennials and younger people who say, in many ways, the generation before us, you guys expected us to understand all these things that we have no clue about.
Yeah, I think that what happens.
Great point, Chris.
Absolutely great point. I think that what happens for our generation, and this is not an area that I can speak for everybody. Mm-hmm. This is really my opinion. Is that the younger generation has so much information mm-hmm. and so much access and knowledge. I think we get duped into thinking that they know more than they do.
A high five. Caroline Hunter, one of the great civil rights activists, educators, our homegirl, Dr. Mm-hmm. Hunter's sister, mm-hmm. The Kodak Polaroid apartheid movement. Her and her husband led that. Mm-hmm. She started the alternative education charter movement in Cambridge, Mass, mm-hmm. from New Orleans. I went to dinner with her a couple of years ago, and she told me, she said, one of the problem is, we assume that younger people have more information, they know information.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, they have more information, they know less about the information they have.
Yeah. Or about some of the key
Or about some of the key components
really
of that information.
Wow. That's right.
Exactly. Wow, let's go to the line right now. Line one. Chris, hey, man, you're back on with Dr. Dunham. Great great topic.
My phone call dropped.
Yeah.
But what I was going to say is, in the midst of having access to information, right, because mm-hmm. That's the era that we're in now. Everybody says access, access, access.
Right.
Yeah.
But if nobody's teaching you what to do with this information,
great point.
It becomes an equal playing field.
Yeah.
You know, I was having a conversation with my father-in-law. We were talking about the disparities that are going on in New Orleans right now, where people are being priced out of neighborhoods that they've been a part of generationally. And, you know, now they have 20-somethings that are Caucasian, whose parents bought the house, mm-hmm. and 2 to 5 years down the line, those same 20-somethings are going to walk away from the house, and then we're going to be in the same housing crisis that happened before.
Mm-hmm.
To speak on the whole social media and Instagram craze, this is something that it allows people to put on a facade even more.
Yeah.
You know, the whole act of, the whole notion of I'm stunting or I'm putting on for my people, they can really do this. They can build a facade and then hide. You don't really see them out in public. You don't really see them in certain social situations and things like that.
So
it sets up. And people don't show you the bad side.
Yeah.
Me and my wife just recently had our first child. She's 9 months now. And all of the articles, we read articles and things like that, but nobody showed us the 2:30 a.m., the 3:30 a.m., the 4 a.m.
Right.
when the baby's waking up and hungry, and both of y'all about to pull your hair out because you got to get some sleep because we both have to go to work the next day.
Yeah.
Nobody shows that struggle.
Right.
They only show the glamorous, the end result. So
how do you, as millennials, and your wife deal with it? Did y'all log off? You sign off? Do you do it in doses? How do y'all deal with it?
We keep social media. We try to keep social media to a minimum.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because it's something that can be a talking point, mm-hmm. you know, or sometimes we'll be in each other's presence, but we'll be thumbing through Instagram together. Mm-hmm. So we try to combat that with saying, okay, hey, if we acknowledge that, hey, we're on the phone, or hey, like, you feeling some type of way, was it something that you saw, you know, on social media, like, what's up? Like, we check in with each other, and we just try to be realistic about where we are in our lives.
Thank you.
Our goals and keep, like, there are tools that we use. We have a vision board. We have a goal board where we write different goals on a whiteboard that we made, and we have it posted up.
Chris,
and we check off those things to try and keep us on track, because when you're watching other people and it looks a certain kind of way, and we all have wants, when they have some of the things that you necessarily want, you feel like you're working for, things like that, it can bring about a sense of depression.
But Chris, let me interrupt
you for
1 minute.
Hey, Chris, thank you, man. We're going to go. Thank you. With the lines, we're going to let's go.
Go right ahead.
Go ahead.
So I think it's what he's illustrating is that you have to put intentional time into how to deal with all this information.
Right.
You can't just be a victim of it. You can't just allow yourself to just
it'll sweep
have
you
it
out.
All. It will. It really will.
So you have to control
you
it.
You have to control
like
it.
Like Chris and his wife are
That's
doing.
Right. And you can't be fooled into thinking that if you don't know everything, you're somehow losing.
If you don't have everything.
But knowledge is such a big, big thing.
Right.
But if you don't know enough that you won't be successful, you really need to be careful about what you do need to know and spend time on that.
Wow. Dr. Dunham, you answered some powerful questions. Line two, Miss Eloise, you're our last call of this segment. You're on with
Dr. Dunham. Good morning.
Good morning. God
Chris
bless you.
And Dr. Dunham just made some very positive sense to the people that is going through this mental illness and being played by our public officials and their foot soldiers. You know, they don't want to make a difference for you. They won't continue keeping you in that state of mind that they can come to you with a pizza and some ice cream and everybody go to screaming and say, oh yeah, he's so good. But then the whole community is falling down around you and your mental capacity is so bad that you can't even understand what's really going on around you. So, you know, we need people like Chris and the doctor there to bring us to that point where common sense makes common sense.
Wow.
We need to be talking to our community about the play that our public officials and their foot soldiers play on us when we got a multiple problem and they come to us with pizza and ice cream.
Great point, Miss Eloise. Wow. Powerful point. Miss Eloise says, if it look like a duck,
it is.
And walk like a duck.
Yeah.
If it look like a false, a broken promise,
it is
a false promise.
And I would say, if you're tired, go to sleep.
But you also said something, Dr. Dunham, that's important. You have to be intentional about your own therapy, about how you look at it.
You have to.
You can't just consume anymore.
You cannot be passive in this. You really can't. And you got to really step away in order to think about what it is you really need to be focusing on. Because that happens too. In all of that noise.
Right.
So that's another thing that I do. I keep noise away from me.
Right.
And noise comes in a lot of different forms, right? You cannot think clearly when you're around too much noise. A lot of social media is noise.
Well, let me say this. You can think clearly if you go out to Family Day, though.
Yeah, you can.
And Family Day is going to be October the 27th, 11 a.m.
That's right. We want everybody to come out.
I'm going to bring the family out there.
Bring your family out there. ACOG Born is a family event. We're going to have music, food, fun, vendors with a lot of health information.
Where's it going to be?
At ACOG Born, which is in Chalmette.
Right.
And we are also providing transportation for
Beautiful
our
place.
People
right.
as well.
Dr. Rochelle Hardenham, you promised to come back.
Continue. Yes, I will.
Thank you for all these free sessions.
You're welcome.
They are extremely helpful. We appreciate you. We love you. And thank you for, I think we're finally starting to see
the pieces of the mental health puzzle
coming together. God bless you for that.
So stay hopeful.
Yeah. Always stay helpful, but stay intentional.
Stay intentional.
Stay strategic.
Too. Stay strategic.
Well, when we come back, talking about being intentional and strategic, probably one of the most intentional and strategic elected officials we've had in a long time, Cindy Nguyen, our council member for District E. She's going to give the District E update after the break. God bless y'all. We'll be right back with Cindy Nguyen.